Kern, and you'll get a hold of her. I think it's great advice. It's you always have great information for our listeners to take hold. In fact, I'm just thinking as you're talking, one of our finalists, I would like to see you guys kind of connect there. I think it would be great because networking and adding other features to what you're doing helps to broaden what it is that you do, and then you're able to offer a diverse a line of services.
Well, I'm a big proponent of the total person, I propose and advocate total wellness.
Okay.
And so yes, I'm always about networking and sharing information, and we learn from each other.
Absolutely. Yes, definitely. I know I learned a lot. This whole process, I learned quite a bit, and I was very engaged with with all of the contestants. We started out with 12, engaged with all of the contestants, and just really amazed, not so much amazed because I see it all the time, but it's good to see in the flesh people who are really passionate about what they do and then are willing to step out and without really knowing the outcome, just grinding. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, the thought process is there, but they put everything into it in order to build it and make it a reality. And that's got to be something when you take a thought and then all of a sudden, boom.
And I just want to say I applaud what you all have done. That was a wonderful experience because I'm a big proponent of people pursuing their passion.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know the saying is when you do what you love, you'll love what you do and it will not feel like work.
It doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't at all.
And I was just thinking about the Honey Bun person. Like she said, they've been doing it while she was a little girl in Carolina. She started in fourth grade. I forgot the age.
Just baking.
And she really enjoys doing it. Now she's turning it into a successful business, and they have food and restaurants.
Exactly.
And things of that nature,
so. That's fantastic.
Exactly. And what she may not have mentioned is now they're going into brick and mortar.
Wow.
So the money is going to help with some of that process to go into brick and mortar. So imagine how that must feel. That you've just started as hubby was saying, just baking these for your friends and family, and then start charging them, and then it grows from there.
Wow.
And so, but the reality, what I love about this process and why I wanted to do it is they bring the tangible experience of the time and the process.
Yeah. Right.
Sometimes we think we start something today and we're going to be a millionaire tomorrow, or we start a job today and we want to be the president of the place. You know, it takes time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ups and downs. There's the moving forward. There's the sidestep. There's the step back. Mm-hmm. There's the comeback. You know, all of those things are a part of the growth process. And you see that in the fabric of who they are and how they've put what they've put together. So again, I applaud them. That's Letitia and Anthony McFarlane of the Honey Bun Cake Factory. Congratulations. Much success. But you'll be hearing more from them and about them and along with the others. So so we are so excited. So,
well, I got to applaud you, though, for the final pitch because, you know, that started off as an idea and you've had, there were 12 finalists that actually made it to the show, but they were
There was 30-35 people who actually had applied for the process. But the funny thing about it is the last day when I was in the process of filming, and you know, you're going through, you know, this here, that there, that there, and I realized even for myself, just like Letitia baking the cakes since a young girl. When I was a kid, I used to organize like our family events.
Really?
And I used to get my sisters together and do a routine and they would have to perform for family. And so I realized in a moment that, you know, I've been doing this for years.
Wow.
I've been doing this for years, organizing certain things within the family.
Your
passion. And my young nieces, I organized their talent shows and stuff like that. It's amazing how, you know, it all comes back. So
that's
nothing is wasted.
No.
Absolutely.
Nothing, no experience in your life is wasted. It is all a part of the plan, good or bad. You extract from it what you will. You know, I saw a post that said the same water that boils the egg softens the potato.
I saw that.
And it's like, you know, when you think about it, you extract from it what you will.
Yeah.
And that's about you being empowered and you taking it, being in touch with who you are and developing.
And being present in your experience.
Precisely.
And not allowing other people to dictate why you're in this situation. Because folks will want to tell you, well, you know, you obviously did something wrong because this, that, and that. No, there's a lesson. You know,
that's
there is a lesson in every hill and valley in the process and the journey of living, and just take from it, use that time to meditate and take from it what you will, and it will be the gas in your tank to get you where you need to go.
Well, thanks for being an inspiration and a good example of that.
Well, you know, I learned from a lot of folks, and I always enjoy having you here because you always have a wealth of information. And I get a few things from Cedric, too.
just a little
and
bit.
And I appreciate this opportunity to help people be their best selves.
That's right. Yeah. Healthy and happy you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right,
happy
Doctor.
And healthy you.
Happy and healthy you. Yeah, get it straight. Happy and healthy.
Loving life and living life.
And, of course, as always, we always appreciate Buddha coming in the morning and making sure
Buddha.
We're online. We thank you, Buddha. We thank you, WOL. We thank you. Just, you know, we thank you, God. We thank
Absolutely.
You. Just really appreciative of all the things that that we have. Look at the positive, people. Look at the positive. Okay? Well, you have a great weekend. We love you, and we'll be back next week.
All right.
Take care.
WOL Washington, WPRS HD2 Waldorf, WKYS HD2 Washington, WMNJ HD2 Bethesda, a Radio 1 station, and worldwide at WOLDCNews.com.
Welcome, NBA fans. Tonight's NBA.
Man, nothing beats seeing an NBA game in person.
Hey, buddy, thanks again for driving. So, where are our seats?
Oh, we're sitting right around the corner.
Hey, but before we do anything, let me stop for a second at the designated driver booth and make the pledge.
Excuse me, sir, did you say designated driver?
Yeah, I'm the designated driver tonight.
Congratulations, you are a winner. And for being the designated driver and always buckling up every trip, every time, you have won the adoration of your friends and family who will get home safely from the game.
Cool.
Your prize also includes the gratitude of all of the drivers on the road who won't have to fear for their lives. And finally, you've won the chance to follow your favorite NBA team to the NBA Finals, because responsibility has its rewards.
Woo! Yeah!
To find out more, visit the designated driver booth at the arena or visit rhir.org. A message from this station and Team Coalition.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures. A stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college. This is beyond a simple donation. It's the opportunity for America to invest in its kids and take an active stake in the future of the country. The return on your investment isn't money. What you get back is knowing you protected our potential. So one day, that potential can grow up to become surgeons and architects, executives and engineers, people who can change the future just by being a part of it. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. A public service announcement brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Blue is my favorite color. What's yours?
What's yours?
Red is my favorite color. What's yours?
What's yours?
Well, yeller's sweller for this little feller.
And me, I'm keen on green.
So what's your favorite color? Tell us, please.
Kids will spend 20 minutes listening to songs like
what's
this.
What's your favorite color? Tell us, please. What's your favorite color? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite?
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. They have the time. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives and the Ad Council.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. They have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell is sponsored by Equity Resource, a development, construction, and investment firm that is transforming properties throughout the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Our mission is to develop properties at a high level of value, a low risk of investment, while providing impeccable service to our customers. When you're ready to sell, renovate, or invest in a property, choose Equity Resource. Call us today at 202-621-6632 or visit our website, equityresource.net.
News Talk 1450 WOL, Washington, D.C., a Radio 1 station, and worldwide at WOLDCnews.com.
The views and opinions of the following show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of News Talk 1450 WOL, Radio 1 Incorporated, or their management.
Good morning and welcome. I'm your host, Attorney Ethel Mitchell. Welcome to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. Welcome to all who are listening live throughout the world on Radio 1 Station 1450 AM, WLDCnews.com, and EthelMitchell.com. We are going to bring you a outstanding program today. We have on the line already Attorney John Cummings, the owner of the Whitney Plantation in Louisiana. And he will tell us why and how he transformed what was a real plantation into a powerful museum dedicated to giving homage to the enslaved people in the United States and particularly in Louisiana. We also have on the line Dr. Ibrahima, I may be pronouncing it wrong, and forgive me, please, Dr. Seck, who chronicled the history of the Whitney Plantation and the slave trade between the French coast of Africa and Louisiana. This program, as always, you know, is brought to you by my law office, Wills and Trust, LLC, where I prepare wills, trust, power of attorneys, advanced medical directives. So if you or someone you know needs a will or assistance in administering an estate, you can call me at 202-772-1988. As you hear me say every year, every day, I'm on the air, law is really powerful. It can help you or it can hurt you. And we're going to see how law, which is Dr. Seck put it so succinctly, he called it legalized violence against black people in the United States, really, really hurt us. And we need to know it, and we need to know it so that we can empower ourselves. Everyone in the United States needs to know this. Each week, Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell aims to empower you by bringing you professionals who know the law to enlighten you. All of the programs are archived at lawtalkwithethelmitchell.com, so if you missed a program, go there and you can listen to it. It takes about a week to get them up, but do know that all the programs are archived there. I must remind you, as always, that what you hear on the program is for information purposes only. No attorney-client relationship is established by anything said on this program. Each person's circumstances are different, and you must seek individual counsel for any situation for which you need legal advice. Did you know that between 1525 and 1866, according to the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database, 12.5 million Africans were shipped to the New World. 2 million of them died during the Middle Passage. 2 million. 10.7 million survived. Before 1820, on this one plantation alone, on the Whitney Plantation, over 107,000 people were enslaved in Louisiana. And I want my listeners to realize that we're going to be talking about one plantation in one state. And I want you to realize that slavery existed throughout all states in the United States. We tend to think that the North did not have slavery, but that is absolutely not true. There were slaves in New York, in Delaware. Every state in this Union had slavery. Okay. It is my pleasure and honor to introduce and welcome to the program Attorney John Cummings and Dr. Seck, who have created a historic site that gives homage to Enslaved. It is the only one of its kind in the United States. And I encourage my listeners to Google the Whitney Plantation, where you will see pictures of what Attorney Cummins and Dr. Sect have created, which show in very vivid detail the life of one slave community on one plantation. Attorney John Cummings was born and raised in New Orleans. He is a retired trial attorney. He attended Loyola University, where he earned a degree in business administration and his law degree. He is a real estate developer and owns literally thousands of acres of property. He owns a luxury hotel in the French Quarters and has properties in not only Louisiana, but Mississippi and Texas. For decades, he has been a crusader for the rights of African Americans, including in 1960, where he fought against the closing of the giant Audubon Park swimming pool rather than integrate it. He worked with other locals in New Orleans to successfully open it as an integrated facility. Dr. Seck is a member of the History Department of the University of Dakar in Senegal. His research is mostly devoted to the historical and cultural links between West Africa and Louisiana. His doctoral dissertation was entitled African Culture and Slavery in the Lower Mississippi Valley from Iberville to Jim Crow. He is a collaborator of the West African Research Center located in Dakar, Senegal, and is the academic director of the Whitney Plantation Museum of Slavery. The museum is located between Wallace and Edgar, Louisiana, in St. John the Baptist Parish. It's approximately 35 miles outside of New Orleans, and I encourage all of my listeners to go to it. I encourage all academicians, black and white, to learn this. This is a critical part of the history, not just of black people, because it is a story of how white people treated black people in the United States of America for over 200 years. It is the story of how George Washington treated black people on his slave as he was building this country. It's the story of how Thomas Jefferson treated his people, his black people on his plantation while he was writing the Declaration of Independence. So it is uniquely the story of American history, and we need to know it. We need to know it. So, Attorney Cummings and Dr. Seck, welcome to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on this program.
Well, thank you for inviting us. It's an honor. And Ibrahim and I are, of course, I'm Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
And Ibrahim is very much African. And as he'll tell you, about 60% of our slaves early on came from Senegal.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like, first of all, I'd like to call you Ethel, if that's okay. And
please
my name
do.
Is John. I have always wondered why, and as I became better educated, even more so did I wonder why all of the great works on any subject were praised when they were completed and then eventually found themselves on a shelf somewhere unused. And what we wanted to do was not only to produce an excellent museum, but to motivate academia, and there's no criticism here at all, but motivate academia to bring their great works study, form a great works, and implement their knowledge in order to change, in order to produce change. And one of our purposes here is to return to the table in 1865 and to get a consensus among people of goodwill and identify those things that we as Caucasians denied our brothers from Africa. And once we have consensus of those deprivations, we hope that we could then embrace them and own them and determine what it is that we as a people can do. What can we accomplish in order to remediate the things that we that have been experienced by African Americans? And so far, it's been our belief that it is education. And once educated, all of the lights go on. We don't find here in New Orleans, we don't find college graduates in drive-by shootings.
Mm-hmm.
We don't find college graduates in our black neighborhoods selling crack and addicting their brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have looked at that, and I'll get to that a little bit later. But it's very important that we, that when we praise people who have done great works, even in this subject, great, great works have spent years, maybe a lifetime in research, we have to apply that research. We have, for example, today, Pell Grants that have been so crucial in financing our needed education. And the government is now actively addressing the possibility of eliminating $300 million from that program. At any rate, we have produced enough of the plantation to open it in December.
Uh-huh.
It was a great reception. We had a wonderful time. We filled it with music. We had seven choirs. We had 100 member African American marching band.
Uh huh.
And we had one hell of a good time there.
Oh, good.
Now,
we have to take a break. I'm sorry, Attorney Cummings. When we come back, I want you to continue to tell us about the plantation. I really do, because you've done some amazing work. I mean, I want my listeners to know what you have created. And as soon as we come back, we're going to continue, but we have to go to break right now.
Just me. It's the whole group. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
1450 WOL, where information is power.
Moving today or tomorrow and not sure who to call? Well, your worries are over. Ted's Moving and Hauling at 301-254-8221 is your one-stop place to call when you need to move from your apartment, home, or office. Ted's Moving and Hauling is one of the best, with experienced and professional movers to handle all your needs with no job too large or too small. Ted's can do it all. Call now to find out more. 301-254-8221. That's 301-254-8221. Need something hauled away? Ted can do that too. Ted's Moving and Hauling is one of the best, and with some of the best prices in town. So if you need to move uptown, downtown, or out of town, call Ted's Moving and Hauling today at 301-254-8221. That's 301-254-8221. That's Ted's Moving and Hauling. Moving you from your home, office, or church. Call Ted's today at 301-254-8221.
What fuels you? Here's Paul, going to the ski slopes with his buddies.
Dude, double black diamond?
Last one down buys lunch!
Paul fuels up at Exxon and Mobil stations, where our quality gasoline helps improve fuel economy. And now he could win $1,000 in Exxon Mobil gift cards just by telling us what fuels him, like skiing with his pals. 10 weekly winners. Full details at Exxon.com or Mobil.com. Exxon and Mobil. Energy lives here.
No purchase necessary. Ends April 7th, 2015. Restrictions apply. Actual fuel economy benefits may vary.
News Talk 1450 WOL AM, where information is power.
Welcome back. You're listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell, and Attorney Cummings was talking to us about how and why he created the museum. Attorney Cummings, can you tell us a bit more about the structures and the memorials that you have created on the plantation, that particularly the one that caught my attention as I looked at it online, and I will be there soon, is the bronze memorializing of the names of slaves and the statutes and so on. Tell my audience about those and what they are and what they mean, please, sir.
Ethel, I'm going to describe one since you asked me, and then I'm going to ask Dr. Seck to come in and to tell you what a magnificent product he has produced.
Yes,
how he did it and how it relates not only to Africa but to all African Americans in America.
Yes.
One of the prime memorials there at the plantation, Ethel, is what we call the Field of Angels. Mm-hmm. And that's where the bronze statue of the African angel holding a dead child, a dead slave child. I can't go there without crying.
Mm-hmm.
We have the names engraved in granite of 2,200 slave children who died before their third birthday.
Wow.
We have the names of the child, the date of death. We have his age, her age, and the name of the mother. Now,
that's great, yeah.
But it's the only record, Ethel, that those people ever lived, those little guys ever and girls ever lived. And many times we have a situation where, for example, the mother would die in childbirth, and so the child did not have a name. So in that that section where it said the name is written Little Negro or Negro Child, and on age only the word little.
Wow.
With no name for a mother.
Mm.
And there were many who died in childbirth, many who were struck by lightning, many who fell into the boiling waters of the laundry pot every Monday, drowned, and very, 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 very moving part of the history, but it's important.
Yes.
Child mortality was, infant mortality was high, white and black, but four times greater with black.
Yeah.
All right, now, Dr. Seck, Ibrahama Seck, pronounced Ibrahim, another word for Abraham. And he's here. Mm-hmm. He came with us 13 years ago as the brains of this maneuver. And he came to us 2 months in the summer and worked on retainer for the rest of the year in Africa. And he is probably one of the top 10 informed scholars on the Atlantic slave trade. Ibrahim?
Thank you, John, and good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Seck.
Michelle, I'm glad to be part of this show this morning.
Thank you very
and
much.
And before I talk about the other memorials, I would like to add something to your introduction about slavery.
Yes.
Just to remind the people that slavery is a universal thing. You know, it happened everywhere, depending on the time. right now in Mauritania, we have some activists who are in jail because they stood up and say no to slavery because slavery is still there. A few days ago, the former president of Senegal, Abdoulaye Wade, he treated the president who defeated him and who is in office now as a slave and a cannibal because just his son is in jail for stealing money. So it is a universal problem. You have that problem in Africa too. And more people, African people, were enslaved in Africa than elsewhere in the world. Most of them remained on the continent. Today the subject is about the United States of America, a wonderful country, the number one democracy in the world, a country where everybody wants to go, want to come. So it is important, but we have a problem here in America. It is the problem of about black people because they were slaves in this country. And the work we are doing now is a work of memory, of remembrance, to let people understand what happened in this country, in this great democracy, in order to correct this this thing. And I'm just too sad whenever I watch TV, when I see the news about someone being killed or robbed or whatever, and oftentimes when I see the suspect is maybe 90% is a black person, just like advertisement of runaway slaves in the past. When someone, the shooting was also in the street of the United States, mostly black people, just like lynching during Jim Crow time. So that said, I would like to complete the presentation of the plantation, the memorials. John talked about the wall of, about the Field of Angels. To me, it is the most moving monument in the on the plantation because it is about children. Who were slaves and who died, most of them before their second or third birthday. The first memorial you visit when you come to the plantation is called the Wall of Honor. It is a wall where we engraved on granite slabs all the names of the people who lived on the plantation, whose sweat and blood and tears made possible the continuous building of wealth on that plantation. So far, I was able to find about 356 names of people who were enslaved over there. Many of them came from Africa, and others came from the east coast of Africa, of the United States, when the domestic slave trade was abolished in 1808.
When you said 256, did you mean 256,000?
356 names. Most of them, go ahead.
The 107,000 names on the other wall that he's going to explain were the slaves who we have discovered who were in Louisiana through 1820.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so I'm talking about the Wall of Honor carries only the names of the people who were enslaved on the Whitney Plantation during the 18th and the 19th centuries. So, I just put there the name I found in on official documents, like inventories in the Coode House, notarial documents in New Orleans. So it is a way for us to take him back to life. You know, it is every individual counts. So we have the name, when they were born, where they were born, either in Africa or in the on the East Coast or in Louisiana. We have the skills. We have also the diseases, you know. And also the so-called default, you know, defined by the slave owners, like, you know, those the runaway slaves and those who are called also thieves. excuse me. And the second memorial is called Gwendolyn Midler Hall Alleys. It is dedicated to Gwendolyn Midler Hall, who is a historian. Gwendolyn Midler Hall was born and raised here in New Orleans, and she lives now in Mexico. She's a historian. She has retired. She taught for many years at Rutgers University, and she wrote that seminal book called Africans in Colonial Louisiana. And when she was writing that book, when she was researching the book, she also built a database where she collected all the names of the people who were enslaved in Louisiana from 1719 to 1820, which means from the arrival of the first slave ship from Africa to 1820, 107,000 entries. And that's all those names are engraved on granite slabs, and you can find those slabs in that memorial. We have
that is wonderful. Walls. That is wonderful. So that they will not be forgotten. At least their names are there.
And we have 18 walls, 12 slabs on each wall, and 216 slabs, 107,000 names. Along
very
with
good.
Quotes of people who were enslaved in Louisiana, freed slaves who were interviewed in the 1930s by the Federal Writers Project volunteers, in the framework of the WPA, the Work Progress Administration.
Yes, I understand that you all have, during the WPA, people recorded stories. And that you intend to have these recordings available when people go into the slave cabins and so forth so that we can actually hear the voices. Is that correct?
We found the practice was to send the old reel and tape to record the ex-slaves, and then they would be sent back to Washington where they would be transcribed, and then they would be erased and sent back into the field.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, I believe, over 6,000 African Americans who were working on the project.
Uh-huh.
But the Library of Congress found one reel that had never been erased.
Wonderful.
And so we got copies of it, and it's about 11 slaves. And I sent it to my son-in-law, who is in Hollywood, and asked him, and he used to be one of the sound directors for Oprah Winfrey in Chicago.
Okay.
And I asked him to clean them up.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually hear them. And
wow.
So as you walk through the slave quarters, you will be able to hear the voice of ex-slaves telling you how it was, and that's what we're doing there, best we can. We're not interested in presenting how somebody thinks it was, but we're bringing it from the people who endured.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, when you come, Ethel,
yes,
you're going to stand there, you're going to listen to that, and you're going to change right there.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe you, and I encourage my audience to go. It's you're what about 35 miles outside of New Orleans? Is that right?
Almost all of it on an interstate. It's about a 35 or 40 minute drive.
Okay.
Between New Orleans and Baton Rouge.
Okay.
Going west. I hope you understand what John just said about those quotes about the slave narratives.
Yes.
We use mostly those narratives to tell the story of slavery.
Yes.
It is a first-hand, it is about first-hand documents, you know, the ex-slave.
Yes.
Talking about themselves.
Right.
So we are not trying to interpret too much. We just let the people who endured slavery tell themselves what they went through.
That's
and
powerful.
And I hope that people understand that that approach.
And
that's all what we do. When you come to the plantation, you will see those quotes all over the place. And I'm glad that people understand them, you know. Even children who come over there, school boys and girls, they can read and understand. And last week, I had a colleague from Martinique who came to the plantation. He was able to read those quotes, and he photographed them. And when he went back to Martinique, he translated them and wrote a fine article, which he published for the Francophone world.
That is, you know, I want to tell both of you, thank you.
Ethel, don't.
I really, no, I'm serious, because
We are only cheerleaders. That's it. But let me tell you this. You will walk there, and we have on each slab in the Midler Hall, L.A., each slab has two quotes from the oral histories. And they are life-changing. For example, a woman who was 104 when she gave her testimony, she said, "Mama called us out of the fields and told us to come to the quarters because we're going to Texas. that time there was a mistaken belief that if you could get your slaves to Texas, you didn't have to free them. It was wrong, but they operated under it. And she said, when I got to the quarters, there were wagons, and all the women and the children were getting in the wagons, and the men were behind the wagons. They had to march to Texas. And then this comes, Ethel. He said, it's the last time I saw my father.
Oh, my.
I never saw him again, she said. And I longed for him. And I know he longed for me. And then you have, the stories of the brutal treatment where if you were pregnant, a pregnant woman, and you were in the fields, and you just displeased the pusher, they'd dig a hole so that your stomach could fit in the hole, and they would strip you naked and beat you.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's it. Oh, my God. That's what we're trying to do, you see.
Oh, my God.
We have our next exhibit that's ready to be placed. We're waiting for the artist to come to place it. Is a remembrance of the biggest riot in American history of slaves. It happened across the river from our plantation in Destrehan. And 400 slaves got together eventually. And they said that they would not be owned by any other man or any country. And that they would be equal and free. That was 1811. And 34 years earlier, in Philadelphia, a group of our people, Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, Hancock, they got together and said the same thing. It was over.
Yeah.
And the slaves then killed their masters, burned some of the houses down, started to march to New Orleans to free all of the slaves in New Orleans. They were intercepted, 25 or 30 of them killed. The women and children were sent back to the plantations. There were trials over several days, and 60 were convicted and sentenced to death, and they would be taken back to their plantations and at their own plantations and shot in front of the other slaves. And then they would be to be beheaded and their heads on poles where the slaves could see them every day until the heads rotted and fell to the ground. We now have the skulls. They have been produced for us by the great artist Woodrow Nash, African-American artist from Akron, Ohio. And they will be mounted on stainless steel rods, and they will blow in the wind. They will move. Very haunting. But it is important that we go and we look, because today we'll pick up and we will look in the paper and see where a French journalist was beheaded. And we think, who in the hell could do this but savages? People with no respect for life. And it's true.
It's true.
And then we stand there and realize that right there where they're standing, within a few miles, it happened 60 times right there.
In our own country.
In our own country.
Yeah,
and
in our
we
own
have
country.
People, for example, who say, it's a common refrain, my people, where they say, why can't they just forget about it? They say, I'm not responsible for any of that. I never had slaves. Nobody in my family ever has. And I would not have a slave today, for God's sakes. It's over. And they can say that. And that's true. But the nation can't say that, Ethel. And our religious institutions can't say that.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you something. I don't think that you know this. I don't know that your audience knows this, but in 1452, the most powerful man in the world was Nicholas V. He was the Pope of all Christendom. We had no Protestants then. And he wanted to praise Portugal. So he wrote what's called a papal bull. That's the highest expression of the Catholic Church. And he praised King Alphonse and said that he certainly would go to heaven. He's such a good friend of Christianity. And to reward Portugal, he gave to them the exclusive right to trade in Africa. And they did. They got timber and animal hides and diamonds and gold and
ivory,
pen. And towards the end of that papal bull, and I'll be glad to send it to you.
I'd love a copy of that.
I have it. I have it in Latin and I have it in English. But towards the end, and I'm going to say it twice because you won't believe it, he gave the Portugal the right to reduce Africans to perpetual slavery. The head of all Christendom gave the Portugal the right to reduce Africans to perpetual slavery. And after freedom, Ethel, many of those young male slaves became Catholic priests, never knowing that if it hadn't been for the head of Christianity, there's a possibility that they never would have been enslaved.
Yes.
And so that is not to put an ice pick in the eye of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. That is to educate African Americans so that they realize how strong the deck was stacked against them and how they should be so elated and proud that this much progress has been made against those terrible odds.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Ms. Mitchell, I would like to add something about religion and slavery. And it is just amazing and heartbreaking how religion has been used through the centuries to justify the enslavement of Africans. You know, before that bull by Nicholas V, you have to remember also that for many centuries, the Muslim traders came to Africa to enslave Africans, and of course with the complicity of African elites who pretended to be Muslims and enslaving people who were not Muslims. So this is a problem. We have that problem until today. One thing I would like to add about the 1811 slave revolt in Louisiana, the biggest slave revolt ever in the United States, in the U.S. South, you have to think about something, you know. You may be living in that time on a plantation. Sometimes you have on one plantation 3, 4, 5 people who have been beheaded, and they had were put on those poles in front of the plantation. Someone may have his father or an uncle or brother, you know, the head just on that rotting on the heads rotting on those poles for many days, mm-hmm. and you are obliged to see it. You have to see it because the master wants you to see it, and to just to let you know that if you go on revolt again, this is what will happen to you.
Yes.
So that that memorial will be on the ground too. And I would like to add two things about the institution of slavery and something which was all over the place in those days. One thing is about sexual abuse. The female slaves, you know, all the slaves were abused. But the female slaves, I think, were really special. They didn't own their body. It was sex on demand. There is one quote on those walls at the plantation about a lady who said, "My mom had 15 children by 15 different men." And let me tell you this anecdote. The other days I had a couple of African-Americans who came to the plantation. Just to tell you how people are uneducated or undereducated about slavery. When the wife read the quote about that woman having 15 children by 15 different men, and the husband said, "What, was he a hoochie mama?" And the wife said, "No, shut up. This is about slavery. These were ladies who did not own their own bodies. They were abused all the time."
Yes.
That's one thing. The other thing that is really heartbreaking on about those quotes and about the institution of slavery, and I think this should be called the first, the number one crime against humankind is the denial of education.
Mm-hmm.
People were just raised to be beasts of burden. They mm-hmm. were raised, the female were raised to be breeders, and everybody was raised to be a beast of burden because you cannot learn how to read and write. We mm-hmm. have a testimony. Someone said that if my master said, if he caught any of his slaves trying to learn how to read and write, He's going to skin them alive. There is another quote from a slave. I think he said his name was Sam McDonald from Mississippi. He said that when he was very little, he was growing up with his little master, I mean the son of the master. And the son of the master, knowing nothing about institutional slavery, was trying to help him to read and write. And he said the mistress caught them and whipped him and told him, you cannot learn how to read and write. You just can learn how to count. Right now, you learn how to count 1 to 10. Because you are responsible of feeding the mules, you have to give to each mule every day 10 ears of corn. You give them more than 10, they die, and they cost more than a nigger. You see how people were raised to be just a beast of burden.
Yeah,
I think that is we have still that problem today among the African American community about education.
And while you're speaking of religion, Ethel,
I'm listening.
This is Cummings. If you read the Bible, if you're a Christian and you read the Bible, for example, I'm going back to Nicholas V. He had to read the Bible, right?
I mean, yeah, he was a pope. Yeah.
And if you read Exodus at 21, the penalty for one man owning another man is death. Death, and I have it on. From the 7 different Bibles, and the strongest one is the Jewish Bible, and there's different phases of the laws and practices, but it was always death.
But how did they get around it to make it okay?
Well, the same way that they're getting around allowing blacks to vote today. Redistricting. It's the same way that they got around the murder statutes during lynching times. It was just an acceptance by those who should have been following the law, especially a pope.
Yeah, but
if
a
you
pope
have,
could say that. Yeah.
If there is money involved, you know, Ethel, that there will be corruption. And although the popes at one time condemned the slave trade, many Christians said, well, we know that he condemned the slave trade with Africa, but we didn't know that he meant you couldn't have slaves.
Oh, boy.
And they refused to, well, it's money, you get paid. And that was that. Now, I'm afraid that we're going to be talking and we'll forget to tell you this, but tomorrow, Sunday, the Plantation has the prime article in the magazine section of the New York Times. It's an 8-page story.
Yes.
And we probably forgot to say some things, so I'd urge you to read us. The other thing is we want every, you especially, and every one of your readers to get involved. We'll never ask you for money. We've got the money. But we need the brains. Everyone who's listening to this white voice has in their history, they have stories, they know things that we don't know, things that are not written. And we urge them, I understand you're going to give the website to them, we urge them to communicate with us and help us. Eventually, this plantation will be run by a predominantly African-American board. I want to tell you that Solange, the singer, Beyonce's sister, was out at our church, and for 3 days she sang in the chapel and recorded her wonderful music. Cecil Tyson came and wouldn't identify herself for a long time. And then when she did, she stayed for 6 hours and very, very interested. We have people like Jamie Foxx. Mm-hmm. We have Samuel L. Jackson's wife who came. They're there. And we urge everybody to come, even people who don't agree with us. Mm-hmm. Just give us an opportunity to talk with you, to expose this evidence to you, and what you do what you want with it. If you think that all blacks should be put back into chains, welcome to America. We got freedom of speech. I disagree with you, but come, because all of this evidence was denied to you in your education. Just take a look at it,
yeah,
and see.
And that's and white people need to see it as well as black people.
Well, that's the whole purpose. People with my color skin have to look and see 60 skulls. We did it, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's not that the thing is, get over it already. But mm-hmm. the get over part is get over denying it. Get over not mm-hmm. taking the step to see what happened.
Yeah.
Once they do, I'm going to tell you, Ethel, that we have a board where we ask you to just write a note on a stick'em and put it on the board, stick it on the board.
Mm-hmm.
I've read every one of them. There are hundreds of them. We have nothing negative there.
Wow.
One kid wrote, not enough candy, okay? But I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree
mm-hmm.
with him.
Mm-hmm.
But you were talking earlier about laws. Mm-hmm. I heard part of your last program.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this. You think about laws as blacks can't marry whites. You think about laws of slavery like you can never be freed. You think of laws like no slave can testify against a white person. All mm-hmm. of those laws. Today, 2014-15, we have other laws. We have laws that, for example, were sponsored by very, very wealthy people. And what they did, very smart, I got to give the devil their due. They came in starting about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and started to redistrict their states.
Yes.
Redistrict their states.
Yeah.
And so now, many of the representatives of the House in Washington are from what they call safe districts. It's all their party. Shouldn't be. All gerrymandered. But they snuck up. They snuck up on the African Americans and did that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have all of these terrible people who, I'll give you an example. Number three person on the Republican side is an ex-friend of mine, Steve Scalise. And he's from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in the state legislature, there was a bill that said, it was a resolution where the House of Representatives would apologize for the state of Louisiana for its involvement in slavery. And he voted against it.
Wow.
All right.
Wow.
And he recently was exposed for going to the equivalent of a Klan rally.
Oh, he's the one.
Yeah, he's
yeah,
the
I've
one.
I've heard about somebody like that. Is
well,
he the one that's in Congress now?
He is. He's third in command of the Republican Party, Dr. Sack.
Wow.
Yes, Ms. Mitchell,
wow.
I would like to, since we are running out of time, I would like to just to finish by this statement. I want to say that all we are doing is, we are aiming toward what we call reparations.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I'm just very sad. Recently, I saw an article. I didn't know that this article even existed. And it was written by a very important African-American scholar. I have much respect for him. His name is Kip Gates. And
mm-hmm.
Mrs. Gates.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Saying
yeah,
that those people who fight for reparations should stop because African Americans are here because their own people captured them in Africa and sold them into slavery, which is a very simple analysis, of course. And we know in what circumstances Africans were involved in the slave trade. And I think we need to have people understand very well, you know, the modus operandi of the slave trade,
well,
and beyond, you know, the painful memories. we need also to emphasize something, and we're going to do it out the plantation, is that out of this painful memory, we have also so wonderful legacies that we need to emphasize, you know. And I think those legacies are what makes American culture so, everybody wants American culture outside of the United States.
Right.
Most of the people. It's because, you know, you have the blues in it, you have jazz, you have rock and roll, you have Zydeco.
Yes.
You have all those things, you know. If you take them out of American culture, I think you still have American culture, but I think the South...
It'd be real different, real different. Before we run out of time, because we're getting close to it, I want to give out the website of the plantation. It's www.whitneyplantation. That's W-H-I-T-N-E-Y, plantation.com. They're on Twitter at Whit Plantation, WHITPLANTATION, and on Facebook at Whitney Plantation. They can be reached by telephone at 225-265-3300. And Dr. Seck, would you give us the name of your book, please, before we leave, because we're almost out of time. I want my listeners to know about it so that they can order it from Amazon.
Yeah, the name is Buki Fe Gombo. Buki, B-O-U-K-I, Fe Gombo, F-A-I-T, Gombo, you know, like Gombo. The history of the slave community of Whitney Plantation, 1750-1860.
Okay, I want my listeners to know that.
About the
plantation, right.
And also it is widened to legacies like... music, food, folk tales.
Right.
And the name of the book.
Yes, sir.
Means by analogy, the slave does all the work, and the master takes the fruits of the slaves.
Yes.
Yeah, it's from a Louisiana Creole proverb: "Bouki fait gombo, lapin mange li."
Uh-huh.
He makes the gombo and rabbit eats everything. Bro Rabbit is, you know, the trickster, and Buki is the wolf name for the hyena, and he has survived here in Louisiana. We still have him around.
Ethel, one other thing.
Yes, sir.
When people who are in denial, it's painful. It's painful for us to sit around and think, you know, that we didn't do any of this, the whites, and we didn't do any of this, and yet we feel a great feeling, a bad feeling, and yet we are defensive. And you will find one of the primary defenses that we will face and that we have faced is just what Ibram said, that it wasn't just us who traded slaves. Those blacks in Africa rounded them up and delivered them, and they put their own people in slavery. And we say at the plantation, that is of no matter. That is of no matter. What we are doing here, our ministry here, is to examine what happened to those people when they came to our shores, and there weren't any African chiefs on our shores.
Right.
This is how we treated those people,
yes.
And this is our shame. You know, leaders lead, Ethel. You have to take steps. You can't write books and do nothing else. You can't just talk. Give advice. I think this, I think that. You must put on your boots and start walking if we're going to change this at all. And right. One final thought.
Yes, sir.
The females had no control of their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
They had to have sex with whoever showed up. And they were they lived pregnant, delivered their children. Their children were sold away from them. It was terrible. However, Ethel... And I want you to think about it. And we want to be invited back to your program.
Okay, yes.
We've got many things to talk about.
Okay, we can
Here's
do that.
One thing, and it's not meant to be insulting at all. It's an academic situation, and we must study it. But if you had no control of your body, and that was the norm on the plantation, and you were a little girl, you were a slave girl, you had many brothers and sisters with different fathers, but that was the norm. You grew up like that. And when you became of age, that's what you did. Because mm-hmm. that was the norm. That's what we, the slave owners, insisted. And so, that's what they did. That's what they thought was expected of them. And then, when freedom came,
The gate was open, and that was it.
Well, Doc,
now, here's a question.
We have to... We've got to go. I mean, literally, we're out of time. But I want to tell you all thank you so much. And you will be invited back, okay? And at that point, we'll pick another time. And at that point, I will announce it ahead of time so people will know what to expect. And then I can have people to call in to talk with you. But
be sure you come pretty soon, Ethel.
Okay. I plan on it. I really do. Thank you all so much.
It won't be long.
Okay, thank you so much, you all, and thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, okay? This is Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell, and we will see you, we will talk with you next week. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 9 a.m. for another informative broadcast. To reach Attorney Mitchell, you may do so by calling 202-772-1988. That's 202-772-1988. Or log on to her website, www.lawtalkwithethelmitchell.com.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
WOL Washington, WPRS HD2 Waldorf, WKYS HD2 Washington, WMMJ HD2 Bethesda, a Radio 1 station, and worldwide at WOLDCNews.com.
Welcome, NBA fans. Tonight's NBA
Man,
Magic.
Nothing beats seeing an NBA game in person.
Hey, buddy, thanks again for driving. So, where are our seats?
Oh, we're sitting right around the corner.
Hey, but before we do anything, let me stop for a second at the designated driver booth and make the pledge.
Excuse me, sir, did you say designated driver?
Yeah, I'm the designated driver tonight.
Congratulations, you are a winner. And for being the designated driver and always buckling up every trip, every time, you have won the adoration of your friends and family who will get home safely from the game.
Cool.
Your prize also includes the gratitude of all of the drivers on the road who won't have to fear for their lives. And finally, you've won the chance to follow your favorite NBA team to the NBA Finals because responsibility has its rewards.
Woo! Yeah!
To find out more, visit the designated driver booth at the arena or visit rhir.org. A message from this station and Team Coalition.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
When I grow up, I want to be a bike that races around the country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a...
I
want
to be
a...
I want to be
a...
I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
News Talk 1450 WOL AM, where information is power.
The views and opinions of the following show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of News Talk 1450 WOL, Radio 1 Incorporated, or their management.
You are so wonderful. A being near you is all that I'm living for.
Welcome to Keeping Up with the Jones. We are live 228 WOL Studios downtown Silver Spring. Me, what was that? Uncle Corn and Buddha behind the producer board. Wonderful group. That's Marvin Gaye. We're going to play some Marvin Gaye for you this morning. That's right. Welcome to Keeping Up with the Joneses. We're your show and keep you up to date based on our perspective. This is our little voice. We want to hope that our voice will magnify into some type of change in the community. We have some excellent listeners, smart listeners, and we hope that you guys will help us put it out there that we have better equality, real equality, not just among different ethnic groups, but within ourselves.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, you know, maybe we can spawn, our little voice can spawn some change somewhere. Because, you know, obviously Congress can't get it right. Well, no. Homeland Security did get one more week.
Got another week.
They got another week.
Protect America.
That's
our homeland security.
Protect the home. So they got one more week. So
yeah, another week to see if they're going to protect us.
Now, is this a ploy or is this just propaganda? What it is? But it, actually, what it's really turning to is shaping up the presidential race between the parties. This is starting to really shape up your beginning imagery. Because with that.
I don't think it's shaped the race.
You don't think it's shaping up the race?
No, it's shaped the politics around the race.
Okay.
Trying to one up the next person, the next party.
This is politicking at its best.
Well, this is how the Democrats play.
Republicans are playing this now too, aren't they?
We got to put this on the Democrats.
Oh?
Well, because we said, like last week, we said that the Democrat is not going to take this president executive order out of the conversation of protecting America, us.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to throw us and our security under the bus to protect a few illegals that can wait till we get this homeland money straight.
So you're saying that's what, and that's the Democrat stance. They want the illegals.
All they have to do is to look, take the funding for this. The president didn't legislate this. He executive ordered it. And you can't executive order something this big and just say, okay, just throw the money in there with Homeland Security.
The protector of our country.
Instead of the immigration bill somewhere or committee somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He put it underneath the Homeland Security, knowing that Republicans can't not fund this agency at this time.
Because really there's no new money, so you have... No.
This is the same doggone thing that the president did just before, 3 weeks before the election, in November that just passed. The midterm, the 2014, when he made the deal to fund Homeland Security until 120 days. This is the deal he made just before the election, the midterm for 120 days. This is the end of the 120 days today.
So let's make a new deal. But we haven't made any deal.
No, it's the funding was supposed to have been then at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You see. So now he done put this. So he kicked that down the road about, remember, the border babies. Mm-hmm. He can't make an agency. You have to legislate into an agency. He's making him big. These are 5-6 million people. That's a lot of.